Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
I always enjoy kicking over the hosting duties to Joel Nellis and listening to his guests and the take that they have on this profession. We have another good one here with four-time state champion Tim Racky from Illinois, who was also the Positive Coaching Alliance National Coach of the Year. Just a reminder to check out all of the things we're doing at blogs.usafootball.com, footballdevelopment.com for our systems on tackling, blocking, and defeating blocks, as well as our free shoulder tackling system, and at FBDEV Coach on Twitter, where we have daily content coming up for you. All of our episodes, close to 500 now, can be found on SoundCloud. All your other apps are going to give you about 250 from the feed, the most recent 250. If you want to go back, if you want to check out some of our playlists, go to SoundCloud and search Coach and Coordinator there. Before I kick it over to Joel, I just want to congratulate him on being named the new head football coach at Brookfield Central in Wisconsin. It's well-deserved for him, and I'm excited that he has that opportunity. So here you go, the host of Home Team, Joel Nellis.
Hello, coaches. Welcome to the Home Team Podcast, where football coaches from around the country provide the coaching community with improvements to their game plans for winning as a husband and a father. Joining us on the podcast today is Chicago, Illinois' Nazareth Academy head coach, Tim Racky. Coach Racky will be entering his 22nd season as head coach and 28th year in coaching football. He began his career at his alma mater, Driscoll Catholic, as an assistant coach and English teacher. After 6 years at Driscoll, he took over as the head coach. During his time at Driscoll, he led his teams to four state championships and a record of 76-13. He was hired as head coach of Nazareth Academy in 2005. And has continued his tradition of success. He's led them to five state title appearances, with four of them being victories, including the 2018 state championship. His record at Nazareth is 98-48. Coach is very proud of the continuity he maintains with his staff. Nine members of his coaching staff have been with him for 11 or more years. He's received a number of coaching awards, most notably the Positive Coaching Alliance National Coach of the Year.
All right, Coach Racky, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Joel.
I'm excited for you to be the first high school coach we've interviewed for this podcast, and I'm excited to share some of the things that you do. And the first thing we're going to start with is we start talking about the stars of your home team. That begins with your wife. How did you meet this special woman?
We were actually friends in high school, and then she moved. Going into her sophomore year, and we were, nothing romantic in high school. And then years later, I was in my late 20s, early 30s, I was in a softball league, and her brother-in-law was on the team, and we kind of rekindled our friendship. And from there, we dated for 6 years and then got married. And two sons later, I got my oldest is a sophomore at Nazareth with me, and my youngest is in fifth grade. Jake's the oldest, Nick's the youngest, and it's been awesome. I'm very blessed to have a great wife and kids.
And what is her background? What does she currently do, or what does she have? What time does she carve out for certain passions or interests?
She actually has the discipline, which I never would have, to work. She works from out of our house for a company, this big warehouse. So she does invoices, customer service, and it's awesome. I mean, works well with, as far as taking care of the house and the kids. So that's what she's currently doing. And really our kids, whether it's, basketball or sports, that's pretty much our life. Revolves around that when we're not working.
What is a character trait that makes her so invaluable in your life?
Well, early on when I was, coaching, and this will date myself, but and I'm not sure if you remember, but when I started coaching way back when, there was no huddle. It was VHS tapes. And yep. The hours were the hours that, you know, we still put in a lot of time, but back then it was, I mean, hitting the rewind button on a VCR and pencil and paper and drawing up play. I mean, it was just, I mean, I loved it. It was a passion, but it was a lot of time during the season away from home. And she got that, you know, and I told her this is who I am. And to have somebody like that, you know, especially in a relationship that got the passion and how much I love to do what I do and support that is just invaluable.
Let's shift focus to your kids. You already mentioned them by name and sort of their ages. What maybe makes them each unique in your life, and what do you see, you know, from them in the future maybe?
Well, the biggest thing, and I think this is just from, for better or for worse, I've been married, you know, I've been married to football essentially my entire life. I've loved it since I was a kid growing up. I'm the youngest of four boys, so just from playing it in youth to high school to college and then to coaching it, so I got to see a lot of dads that were almost forced, whether football or sports, on their kids. So I was very cognizant not to do that to my own kids. So being able to, you know, they're not me. I don't want them to be me. You know, my oldest loves football. I didn't push that on him. My youngest is just going to start flag this year. And again, that's their choice. It's something that they really, you know, told me that they want to do. So they love playing all baseball, football, and basketball. So, you know, me allowing them to become who they want to be and find their passions was, you know, something that I'm very proud of. My wife and I, that they're, you know, and I'm not looking for them to be the, you know, the NFL D1 players. I just want them to be happy, good kids. And obviously education being the most important thing. So I'm just really proud that we, you know, we're blessed that we have good, respectful, modest kids that, you know, have a sense of humility. So that's something we're both very proud of.
That's awesome. We're moving into a section called We Make the Call and discuss how you've navigated some of the important decisions throughout your career. You know, we all know what it takes to be a coach, and obviously you've talked a little bit about how your wife's been accommodating to that. How are those early negotiations with your wife about, you know, your career in high school coaching?
I mean, she, you know, I guess the biggest thing is that, you know, right early on when we started dating, I mean, I put that on the table. Look, at this is what I do, and these are the hours that I keep during the season. And she embraced that. She got that, very supportive, especially early on in my career. And then once I started having success, you know, at the first school that I was at, you know, the potential or the opportunity for me to go to college, several opportunities were there. But being able to talk to college recruiters about what type of a lifestyle that is, and that's the thing, you know, when you see these college coaches, I mean, it's, you might see bowl games and how glamorous it is, but it's, I mean, you talk about being away just as a high school coach during the season, the recruiting in college is crazy. So I told my wife, listen, we can do this, but it'll be easy for me, but for you and for the kids, you know, here's what you're going to have to go through. We could be in Wisconsin 1 year and then say West Virginia the next. And, you know, you got to go to where the job takes you and the stability and job security is not nearly what it is in high school. And she wasn't too keen on that. You know, we both were born and raised in this, you know, suburbs of Chicago. So, and I was fine. I loved coaching high school football. And so I think that was a critical point in my career where, you know, it was near when I made the jump to the school I'm at now, Nazareth, from Driscoll. So, you know, navigating that type of stuff. I mean, she gets it. It's almost like once August begins, you know, I'm gone, because even with all the technology there is, I can't, I need to be at work to get work done. I don't have the discipline like her to be at home and get a lot done. So, you know, she gets that. So it's during the season I'm working 7 days a week. And again, she's just been incredibly supportive of that my entire career.
That's awesome. How, did you ever look at any of those opportunities you had to maybe coach in college and look at one and be like, oh man, that was either going to be really good or really bad? You know, I think you can now look back and see who you would have been connected with and where they have gone, and maybe the opposite side too, where you could have seen where you're gone, like, oh man, that was going to go down, and that went down in a blaze really quickly. Do you have any of those that you kind of look back on and say, man, I'm so glad I didn't take that, or I kind of wish I would have taken a shot at that.
Yeah, and I guess when I was younger, it was more like, man, I'm glad I didn't go that route. Because the majority of recruiters that I talk to, it's almost like they're jealous of the position that I'm in, where they're like, oh, man, stay in high school. It's a grind. And you look at the statistics for college coaches, you know, especially the higher level, the turnover and the rate of the divorce rate, alcoholism. I mean, I guess more often than not, I'm like, you know, I'm glad that I stayed put in the high school ranks.
When you guys discussed having kids, did timing at all? I know it's a little bit different for high school coaches because, you know, there is no recruiting and things like that. But did you guys, knowing that the schedule you kept, was there any conversation about what might be or when might be the right time?
We're older parents, which I'm glad that we did that. So I want to say we were dated for, 6 years before we got married. And then after we got married, we waited a little bit to have kids. But, she knew that it was going to be, we had them at the right time. I mean, for a football coach, we had my youngest son we had in December, and then Jake, my oldest, we had in May. So it was perfect off-season timing to have kids. So it worked out. It worked out perfect for us.
All right, we're going to move on to a series of questions called clock management and kind of how you spend your time to blend family and football. Other than, I think a lot of guys, at least at the college level, do weekly dinners with their wife. They'll say that's their main thing. Is there anything that you do, a small thing, it can be smaller and even larger, that you do to help your marriage during the season in terms of maybe connecting with your wife on a semi-regular basis?
Well, Sundays is a big day for us. She's 100% Italian, so I'm blessed that she is an outstanding cook. So every Sunday, it's pasta and sauce, and it's amazing. So I think that's especially during the season, that's always a good day for not just my wife and I, but our family to connect. And it's, and we used to play. We used to have our games on Saturday afternoons, and that was a bear. That would make for 16-hour Sundays planning. And then once we got lights here in Nazareth about 8 years ago, having those Friday night games and being able to dice up your Saturday and Sunday to get everything done was just made a world, just a huge difference, not just for me, but my staff as well. It goes a long way with more family time.
How do you, and maybe let's talk a little about that. How does your week and weekend shape out? What do you guys do on a weekend basis from the time Friday night is over? What is your expectations for the staff on Saturday and Sunday? And how have you negotiated allowing maybe your coaching staff to have a little bit more free time or to be with their family during those planning times?
Yeah, well, it's evolved to where, and I've got to keep, because of this, I've been able to keep outstanding coaches on my staff. We've had really low turnover in the past. I just finished my 14th season at Nazareth, and a lot of these guys have been with me for 10 years, if not more. And so on Saturdays, we'll come in with the team and we'll do the film breakdown and we'll get all that done. Geez, I'd say by 10:30. And then I give my guys a lot of freedom with huddle and technology. For instance, my defensive coordinator has three little girls at home, and I thought I was going to lose him. He told me, that he just, because his girls were getting older, soccer, and his wife, not a big fan of the hours that he was keeping. So I negotiated with him. I'm like, his name's Jeff Tompain. He's my defensive coordinator. Just outstanding. He's been with me for 12 years, and I used to call it defense, and then I finally gave the reins to him a couple seasons ago. And I said, Jeff, listen, you don't have to be here on Sundays. You don't have to be here on Saturday. You just do the film breakdown early Saturday morning and go be with your family. And he sold that to his wife. And so this past season, he had all a Saturday and all a Sunday where on his own time, putting together the game plans and communicating with us via you know, email or via huddle and doing presentations just, you know, from different locations. And it worked out great. And I got the key. His wife's happy. He's happy. I still have a great defensive coordinator. And there's a few guys like me on staff where they have to be like me. They, in order to get work done, they got to be, you know, at school. So I got a nice office. I'm the dean of students where I'm at. So half of my office is football, half of it's administration. So that's where I get to focus, lock in, get my stuff done. And, you know, my D-line coach is like that too. So he'll be in there with me and my linebacker coach. But again, they come, you know, I let them keep their own hours just as long as they're ready to go on Monday once the week begins with the game plan. The offensive staff, those guys are still old school to where my offensive coordinator is in the building. And they go into his classroom or the coach's office, and that's where they, you know, they'll get in there early. They're earlier birds than I am. They'll get in there real early on Sunday and get out of there about 11 o'clock. So, again, it's really flexible in terms of our weekend hours, which I think has made a huge, huge difference in keeping and retaining great coaches.
Coach, there's a lot of people that, you know, that have the amount of experience or are getting into it and have only gone through it one way. So how hard was it for you being the kind of guy that is I better be there, right? I have to be there. I have to be in my office. This is how I work. How long did it take you to get over that, you know, or to get over that thought of there is someone I can trust working somewhere else, and I know that that's happening and I can live with that. Like how much of a shift was that for you? And obviously you said you've had great success with it. But did that take you a little bit of time to kind of overcome those initial stigmas? You know, if you want to talk us through that process a little bit, I think that'd be really helpful.
Well, yeah, I think it's more of how you evolve as a coach. And I guess you could take my, you know, how I was early in my career, just my coaching style and philosophy. I'm very passionate. I mean, I'm very high energy. And I was, you know, even more of a yeller in my younger years, where now I've developed into more of a, where I'll get on like the defense or, you know, I'm not getting to the ball, but I'm never going to shame a kid in front of everybody, you know, single out anybody. I'll always have a conversation with them if I need to correct something. And I wasn't as, patient as a younger coach. So I think evolving in that sense as a coach, you're going to evolve the same way with your staff and your assistants. And embrace technology to where especially the younger coaches are masters at technology, where I'm learning more from, say, if, you know, when PowerPoint came out or just navigating, you know, different, you know, how to game plan more with the software, the capabilities that Huddle gives you and other software. What those guys taught me, I've always embraced that, like, you know, what changes inevitable and you have to adapt to that. So I've never been a guy that's been resistant to change or claim that I know it all. And I think that has helped me as a coach, I mean, embracing that, where it's been an easy transition to where, hey, you want to keep good guys, then you gotta realize they have lives and they, you know, as long as they're, again, going to get the work done, then I don't have a problem. If it's, you know, like what Jeff does, my DC, if he gets it done really early in the morning or really late at night when his kids are sleeping. So yep. I mean, we'll come in Sunday morning and he'll have half the game plan done already. So we're all just going back and forth, you know, via email, text, or putting up his presentation on Huddle and going over that. So it's, you know, it's been something I've really embraced, and it really wasn't that difficult as I've evolved with the coach to say, hey, this works. So this is how it's going to be.
That's awesome. I think that's a great insight for a lot of coaches. And, you know, I think it's always keep in mind, even with those changes, obviously still continue to win state championships. And I think that a lot of guys, I know Coach Hines out in California talked about, you know, eliminating even one day, you know, where all the whole staff has free, but the constant communication is critical, and that you're also still working. You're just maybe working when your kids are asleep, you know, and things like
right.
that.
So right.
Well, I think that's awesome. You know, kids, we often hear kids stop by practice, and obviously we know you have a busy schedule. Is there ways that you've seen coaches' kids be involved with the team, maybe in different ways than just stopping by practice?
Oh yeah, my you know, my youngest you know, loves being the water boy, helping with the training staff, being on the sideline when he can't come to practice. It's a little more, it's tougher for me because I live. It's a great thing. It's got its perks and it's got its drawbacks. The first school I was at, I lived, it was, you know, 15 minutes from where I currently live right now, to where I work right now, Nazareth. It's about a 40-minute drive, and that's without traffic. Some days it's a real bear. So it's I liked being farther away, to where now I can go to the store and get a gallon of milk, and I know I'm just going to be Jake or Nick's dad. It's not like, hey, coach, like it was in my first school when I couldn't even go out to get a gallon of milk, and I run into a parent that wants to talk about, you know, why Johnny's not playing, or, you know, where I'm just trying to be a dad. But so just, you know, being able to be myself, you know, and not having, you know, that whole commute, I think that it's a good thing, but also it's a drawback where my kids can't be around the practice field. I mean, Jake's in the program now, my oldest. So that's, you know, that's a different story. But as far as my youngest, he's more with us on game days. So it's, you know, he's still around, but probably not as much as I'd like him to be, because he can't just stop in at practice because we live so far.
Right. Let's say a coach on your staff has maybe an issue or an event that, you know, his son or daughter wants to have be attended during the practice week. You know, have you ever had to deal with that situation? If so, how have you handled it? You know, in terms of what recommendations have you given to your coaches, or even talking about it ahead of time? If you can just share some insights with us on that.
I'm a real, I'm a stickler when it comes to practice, and especially how I organize and structure practice. I mean, I can't stand wasting any amount of time on the practice field. I think it's important to keep kids engaged. But when it comes to practice planning, I absolutely say, if there's a soccer game for one of my coach's kids, they're going to be at that soccer game. So if that means he can come from, say, 4 o'clock to 4:30, well, I'm going to organize practice to where, say, it's a defensive coach. We'll front load our defensive segments early so he can get his butt out of there, and then I'll organize the rest of practice around that. And I do that all the time, whether it's for my coach's kids, or if it's for a coach who has a work commitment or a conference call that he has to do. So it's, and my coaches, and I know they're grateful for it too. So we might do all special teams in the beginning or at the end, if my special teams coordinator can't get there. My offensive guys, say my receiver coach, he's a very successful, businessman outside of, you know, coaching high school football. He's a great coach. So I'm going to work around his work schedule sometimes as well. So, I mean, it's, and our, my coaches know that. They're used to when I come out, we're going to be, you know, I'll try to give them the heads up as much as I can. But when they come out to practice, I'll be like, hey, Jeff's got to get out of here. So we're, you know, I give them the practice plan. We're front loading defense, and then we'll take it from there. So it's very commonplace where my coaches are very used to knowing that. And actually, it's also a good change up because it's not the same every day, which, you know, yeah. you don't want practice to be the same and kids getting in a rut either. So it almost serves two purposes. It helps with my coaches' families, and it also makes us adapt and have different types of practices almost on a daily basis.
That's awesome. I think that's unique. I think there's something to be said for how dynamic a football game can be. And you know, you're going to have those times when it's not all going to play out as you script. So there can be some value to kind of changing things up a little bit from time to time.
Right. Absolutely.
How do you manage your phone time when you're at home?
Oh, I'm so bad. I need to, I'm one of those guys where I need to, you know, if there's an issue, I have to take care of it now. So I'm not, I wish, you know, I know some coaches, my best friend, he's the head coach at Evanston High School, Mike Brzawa. He's really good at putting that thing away and being in the present time. I'm very guilty of not doing that. I mean, I'm glued to my phone too much, you know, and that's, you just nailed something that I really, you know, that I need to work on, because I'm always looking at email, text, if I got to make calls, college coaches, I'm guilty of just not putting this thing away nearly enough.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's always good to know that. I think a lot of us struggle with the same thing, you know, and it can be very hard. I'm one of those people that also needs to have an improvement in that area. And, you know, it's something that there's a constant flow of information. And I'm sure even as a head coach for you, even more so, because there's just more baskets that you have to have contributions in. And so, yeah, I can definitely understand that. And really probably during the season, there's really a difficult time because there is so much going on that's, you know, you have to handle solely being the high school coach versus maybe what a college guy can kind of defer to other staff members.
Well, right. Even, I mean, I remember when before you could get email on your phone and I'd be, whether a weekend or say like a weekend like this weekend where we had Martin Luther King Day off, and just thinking, oh man, I know, and you not knowing how many emails you're going to be, you know, bombarded with. I'm stuck at my desk. And that was a lot of time at work going through emails. And I think that's one of the pros, I think, is that now that I've got email on my phone, well, now I could be more productive at work. But then guess what? Now you're on your phone or at home and you're not in as much present time. So it's a blessing and a curse, man. I wish I could balance it more to where my, you know, like I mentioned, my best friend, he doesn't check it. He doesn't have any email on his phone. He's an assistant athletic director. And that's all he tells me. He goes, man, that's work. I'm not going to be working when I'm at home. I'm going to be at home. So,
man,
I'm like, I wish I had that discipline, brother.
Holy cow. I agree. There's a common saying amongst coaches that the person with the marker last will win in terms of how you game plan. How do you avoid being too analytical every week and therefore spending unnecessary time preparing?
Oh, that's a great question, Joel. I used to think I was the smartest defensive guru in the nation when I was a young defensive coordinator. I mean, before the 3-5, you know, the 3-stack was in vogue.
Yep.
I remember I'd like to think I was one of the pioneers of it. I mean, we were running 96, 97 where guys didn't know what the hell I was doing, you know, with, you know, 5 linebackers. Yeah, I ran it real. It was from a little page in a Texas A&M playbook where I saw this DC, Jerry Kent, he wrote up this scheme, and I'm looking at him like, well, 5 linebackers, what's going on?
Right.
And because at the time, that's all we had. I had smaller kids. We, you know, I was always a 4-3 guy, but if you don't have D linemen, you can't run a 4-man front. So that's what I implemented, the 3-5 in the late 90s. And, you know, and then you start just from that, you start thinking, oh, my game planning was just, I mean, that's, I put in way, way too much time thinking I was the smartest guy. You know, that's why we were successful, or that, you know, because of my scheme, my grand schemes, I'm like Bill Belichick. And then as I evolved and as I got humble, it's more about, it's that cliche you hear. It's more about it's not the X's and O's, it's the Jimmys and Joes. I mean, it's, you know, great players are what's really going to make you successful. But more importantly, what I found is the simpler I began, the older I got, the more simple I made my schemes. Because then I found, you know, kids are going to play faster if they're not thinking, if they're not making 100 different checks. And my staff is, because we've been together for so long, and that's been one of my philosophies that they bought into, because I told them I want it simple, simple, simple. So the older that I've become, I think it's become less important, as you're putting it, having the chalk last. And I think being more simple, letting the kids play fast, giving them ownership in the game plan, I've found that's been much more successful than when I used to have a 20-page game plan back in the day, you know, with a check for every different formation.
Yeah, it can be sometimes, as my good friend Jim Leonard says, he goes, you can just get too far down the rabbit hole and, you know, you realize that your players can't figure out what you're trying to do.
Exactly.
It's amazing talking to him sometimes. I've had chats with him during the season, and he said even at that level, players struggle to change when you make some changes to base concepts, you know, and what you think might be great, it may not be great because your players can't grasp or understand what they've previously been taught about, you know, even just their base, right, their base rules and concepts.
Oh, my God. I mean, there's so many times, and that's I think what effective coaches do, where you think, man, you draw it up on the whiteboard or you're looking at it on your screen and you're like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And then you take it to the field and it's like, oh my God, this is awful. They're not getting it. They're, you know, it's slow. What am I thinking? And I think you have to be, as a coach, you got to be, have the wherewithal, I think, to be like, you know, I was wrong. Telling your players that you were wrong, this is an awful idea, guys. Let's move on. And, being able to do that and see what the players buy into or what they're capable of doing with the time you have is key. So it's I think it's critical for coaches to know that you're not going to be right all the time and you're not going to know it. Once you think you know it all, that's when it's time to hang up the whistle.
The final set of questions we'll get into, I call prevent defense, and that's hopefully providing some bigger picture things that can prevent a coach from losing what is most important. Can you share one of the struggles you had to overcome as a family during your career and maybe what other coaches can learn from what you had to do?
Oh, yeah. Taking off the whistle, I guess, before you get into the house. So, I've been very guilty of, so, you know, we have a bad practice or you have adversity on the team and you walk into the house and, you know, it's still with you. So whether you clam up or you're in a bad mood or it's coming out in different ways and not making you the best husband or the best father, especially early on, I was very guilty of that, or a loss, you know, it was a tough loss on the field and not being able to walk through the door and be, you know, dad or to be just a husband or to be present, but to think that, you know, everything revolves around, you know, this devastating last second loss that I just went through and poor me. And I think evolving in that manner and maturing, I guess is the word, and being able to put that in perspective. Now, do I fall? Yeah, there's going to be times where I'm not at my best as a husband or a father on some days, but I'm much more aware of leaving that, you know, in the car when I get out of my car to come into my house and be like, okay, present moment, take some deep breaths, you know, leave it at school. You know, I can deal with this tomorrow or process it or just communicating with my wife. So I think that, you know, leaving that at school for young coaches, I think is critical because, you know, thank God I have a wife that gets it, very patient and gets who I am and knows that, you know, I'll struggle, I'm emotional, but knows that I'm working at it. I think is a big, big key where don't take yourself too seriously, but more importantly, you know, leave football on the field, and when you're home, be home.
That's awesome. That's some great insights. I appreciate being candid about that because I know it can be hard to do. Because we hold a lot, we spend a lot of time, we invest a lot of time in football, and it's not always an easy thing to let go of. But like you said, you don't want it to affect your life on the home front.
Exactly.
What is one important aspect of parenting that you think carries over to making you a better coach?
That's good. That's a tough one, I think, because my wife kind of gets on me for that. That's an excellent question, Joel, because I want to be, because sometimes I catch myself and she'll say, you know what, you're a dad, you know, your kids aren't your players, if that makes sense, you know what I mean? To where you're almost, and I can't say almost, I am. You know, a lot more often than not, I'm tougher on my kids than I am on my players, you know, and you can get caught into that, those expectations to where, you know, maybe either too demanding or not communicating enough or communicating like, you know, they're one of my players on the field and I'm wearing a whistle. So I think that's a fine line to where I want, you know, I want to be, I love my kids, you know, but I'm not, my wife hates this saying, you know, I'm not their friends, you know, I'm their father, you know, it's my job to raise them right from wrong and to make sure I love them up, but also to make sure I keep them in line with that type of discipline. Because as you know, I mean, I'm surrounded, the older I get, especially as a dean of discipline, and a football coach, the enabling that goes on with parents, or parents thinking, you know, when they got, I like to call them the daddy or mommy goggles on, where they think their kid is better than what they actually are on the football field. Yep. I think that kind of sways me the other way, where I could be a little too demanding on my own kids. So it's something that I struggle with every day. That's why I said it's an excellent question on your part, that it, being able to navigate that and to be an effective dad and not a coach dad or a meathead dad, where I want my kid to be something that he's not, you know, or to be disciplined enough, but not enable him, you know, enough. It's hard, man. It's, like I said, I mean, we think football coaching's hard. I think being a dean's hard, man. Being a parent, holy cow. You hear it's difficult, but it's the toughest job in the world, being a mom and dad.
I wholeheartedly agree with that, son. It should never be taken lightly. I always tell, you know, guys, hey, you can go ahead and get married. You'll figure that out. But I will strongly have conversations with people that are thinking of having kids. Like, I hope you're ready, because what you're about to embark on is something at a whole new level of commitment that I'm not sure you're ready for yet.
Exactly. That's the truth. It's full time, 24/7, man. I mean, it's, you know, whether you win a big game or lose a big game, I mean, it's sometimes they don't, you know, I remember when my kids were young, they'd be running up to me after a tough loss. They'd be all sweaty. They didn't even know what the score was. Dad, did we win or lose? We went down, son. They were at the game. They were just playing, not paying attention. So,
Dana, let's talk a little bit about players. You know, a lot of guys at college will have guys over for a meal, and high school is a little bit different just because of our dynamics. But how do you make a player feel valued outside of what they can give you towards a win or a loss on the field?
I'm a huge, huge proponent of the bottom third of your roster is what's going to make you successful. So making sure those kids that are on service team, scout team, giving you a look, finding a spot for guys on special teams, the guys that are not as talented as your upper third of your roster, is key, especially in high school, to success. And that's been a big key to our success. So I will single out guys on a daily basis. I will make notes during practice where I'm going to catch some kid being good. And I'll, you know, just this year, we just had our awards ceremony, and I was able to highlight Billy McNamara, four-year kid's been in the program for 4 years. He's about 5'6", five, undersized. But you talk about a heart and a no-quit attitude. This kid, he just is epitomizes why I love coaching football, because he never quit for 4 years, never complained about his size, never complained about his lack of speed. Always gave everything, never missed a practice. And that, having that type of a kid and making sure that you highlight and you raise him up in front of his teammates, which I did, you know, when he'd be practice player of the week, and hearing his parents tell me about how much that meant to him at home, where he could brag at the dinner table that Coach Racky had me stand up in front of the team and I got an ovation. I was practice player of the week. That type of stuff for kids that aren't going to get the headlines or have the huddle highlights or be recruited by colleges, that is what makes a successful football team. And that's just one example of many, because I think that's a great question. And I tell young coaches that all the time, you know, the young head coaches. I'm like, make sure you take care of that. For those kids that aren't going to get as many reps on Friday night, take care of those kids that you know, aren't going to be in the headlines or be interviewed after the games. And you're going to see your team and your chemistry and your culture improve immensely. I mean, that's a huge one for me.
I was just talking to a high school coach the other day, and he mentioned to me that he has his starters put away all the pads. He goes, you know, that could be sometimes the role that's left for those younger guys. He goes, I want those guys to have a break. I want those guys to know they're not always going to, you know, they service us and we appreciate it. And, you know, we're going to be the ones to take it. And I think there's always little things that can be done to the high school level. There's very few kids that, you know, really get to probably, they come to, you know, fruition of everything they hope to accomplish in high school, right? There's probably a handful of kids every year that get to do it. And everyone else is kind of left with a little bit less than they envisioned, but still making them feel important is, like you said, vital to keeping those kids a part of your team. And like you said, probably one of the reasons that we all enjoy that for this game.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we, you know, where I've seen programs or guys, you know, with the service team, and I'm directly involved to where I'm, you know, I'm blessed now. I mean, because it was really difficult for me to give up the play, defensive play calling, but I had to do it to keep I was starting to lose guys to, which was good. I mean, you know, when you get guys that get other jobs and it's promotion, I'm happy for my coaches, but I didn't want to lose Jeff Compain. So I gave him the defensive coordinator responsibilities. Well, that was the best, even though it was a hard transition for me, Joel, it was the best thing that happened because being able to now work the service team, work with the kids that are not getting a lot of reps, making them feel important. That opened my eyes a lot as just becoming more of a evolving, I should say, as a head coach. You know, even though it was tough for me to give up the play calling, it opened my eyes to building more relationships within my program, which has, taken it to a whole new level. And it's in a lot of ways more fulfilling for me, too.
Would you point to that? The next question I have is, what have you changed in the last 3 years that's helped you be a more effective coach? Would you point to that, or is there something else that you might point to that's helped you be more
effective? No doubt. It was because it was incredibly difficult giving up the defensive play calling. I wouldn't say difficult. It was something that had to be. It was a tough transition for me.
Yep.
But, you know, and I'm sure the offensive guys weren't, you know, because all of a sudden I'm in the offensive meetings a lot more. So they're like, oh man, go call it defense. But having my hand in each phase of the game, it made me a more effective manager of the game in terms of seeing the game. And if you're a coordinator and a head coach, I think you'd get this of guys that went through it where I'm much more in tune to the flow of a game and that, you know, I'm not missing while I'm making adjustments defensively in the sideline, what's going on in terms of strategy or where the ball is on the field, you know, field position or decisions like that. It's helped me grow in that sense, as far as managing a football game, not just being a defense coordinator, but more importantly, going back to what I told you, being able to put more time into leadership training, being in tune to the culture, what's going on in the locker room, the kids that aren't playing as much, making sure that I'm coaching them up on service teams and they feel important when we're running, our offense or our defense or our special teams. It's really helped me grow and mature as a coach. Now I'm more comfortable in the role, but it took me a while. It wasn't easy.
The last question I have is kind of longer, but I think it's important. It's what I call victory formation. When the outside world looks at a coach, you know, they oftentimes get judged by the wins and losses or the accomplishments of their players. But the potential legacy of a coach can have on his players and his family is much more lasting in value than really anything that can be measured. What legacy or impact are you striving to create through football coaching that maybe you couldn't do in any other profession?
And this goes to why I love football so much, and because of how much it's helped me as I've grown as a man. Because, you know, and it's a love-hate thing when you're this, when you're this enmeshed into the sport of football, to where it's helped me absolutely throughout my life. When I've made bad choices through adversity, growing up in my family, that mental toughness that the game brings you, that's what I want to give to my players. And also the success, how you handle success is a whole different thing. And when I was a younger coach, I was blessed. I mean, in 2001, I was a young head coach and we won a state title, and actually we won four state titles in a row. And I was looking at those guys from 01, and a lot of them, you know, I'm like, well, yeah, it's great to win a state championship, but how come, you know, my best linebacker, how come he failed out of college? How come, wait, what's this? Why is this kid jump? You know, I hear that he's not, you know, just that they were thinking, you don't want that Friday Night Lights thing where that's the pinnacle of their life, you know, where they have a case of beer and they're wearing their Letterman's jacket when they're 25, 30 years old. You know, watching the state championship game. And so that taught me a lot when I was younger and I went to Nazareth. And so really implementing the values of football, and not only how they can win on the field, but more importantly, Joel, how I use, and I do it every day with my leadership training, how this game is going to help them off the field, whether that's in college, as a husband when they become a husband, as a father when they become a father. So I put a lot of time into those lessons and how it's going to help them off the field. And I get good feedback from it. I mean, the parents, you know, we throw around, a lot of teams throw around family, but that's been something that's stuck at Nazareth since I've been there, regardless if we want a state title or not, that those kids, you know, even the teams early on when we weren't that successful, I'm more proud of those teams, the 3-6 teams, that there was no finger pointing. Those kids had a great experience. Those games that we won mattered. And those lessons they learned from a losing season were almost more important than, you know, a state title team and getting all those accolades, but how you work through those difficulties. Those kids almost learned more and became more resilient from that, became better students off the field because of going through that process of failing, because, you know, you're going to fail more than you're going to win in life. That's just how it is.
Well, Coach, we appreciate your time. We wish you nothing but continued success, you know, in the future. And if there's anything we can ever do to help you out, we'd be more than like to have you back on even in a couple of years just to hear how things have been going. And we appreciate your time here today.
Oh, thanks, Joel. I mean, this was great, man. Great questions. And you know, I hope I can help some of those younger coaches out there, because I certainly received the same type of mentoring from the older coaches that have retired now, and I'm becoming one of those guys. So I'm hoping I can give back.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.